Hi, my name is Therese Myatt, and you're listening to the Turning Points podcast. Turning Points magazine is a college publication that is made entirely by and for Native college students at Arizona State University. From print to airwaves, Turning Points magazine is elevating the Indigenous college student experience within Indian country.
Hey everyone, thank you for joining in on the Turning Points podcast. We are returning back for the spring 2020 semester. And for our first episode, we wanted to share with students what are some advice for the first week back at school. So I feel like when we all return back to school, everyone has their own systems of kind of getting back into the rhythm of the semester. So with us today, we have a few members from the Turning Points magazine team. Would everyone want to introduce themselves?
Lakoya Woksape Yuhawi Emachiapi, Nawashichuya Mariah McGee Emachiapi, Wazi Ahaha Emataha Ayash Tempe, Arizona Elwati. Hello, everybody. My name is Mariah McGee. I am studying business entrepreneurship here. I am a junior. I work at the Center for Indian Education, and I am a storyteller for the Turning Points magazine.
Yat Ash Aya Brittany Jinian Shia Ki Ani Nishle Tohiglini Bashchi Totsatni Ada Shiche But Ani Ada Shanella. Hello, thank you for inviting me here. My name is Brittany Jean. I'm a Master's of Industrial Design student at Herberger School of Design at ASU, and I am a graphic designer for the Turning Points magazine. And I just like to throw ideas at people at the magazine and make them happen.
Chante Nape Chiezapi Kshto. Lakoya Maniwa Amblazanwi Machiapi Na Washichiya Savannah Jacobs. I am an undergraduate student in my third year studying political science, as well as other topics like justice studies and Native American governance. I'm also part of the Turning Points team, working as a contributor to storytelling as well as social media.
So all of us sitting here are all at different journeys within our higher education. So I graduated 2 years ago, and we have two undergraduates with us, Savannah and Mariah, and we have Brittany, who's a master's student. So starting off, what is some advice that you would want to share with other students about kind of getting the semester started?
Well, one thing that really helps me is whenever I first attend all my classes, I write down everything I need for each individual class, such as a book, a notebook, a pencil, a pen. And I go through my planner and I write every assignment due for the whole semester. That way I can see it and I can see the days go by. And if I don't do this, then the assignments come and hit me like a bus. So it really helps me stay organized.
Kind of going off of Mariah, I think through the years, I gradually progressed on becoming more organized because it's kind of like my expertise. So I kind of take it a little bit step too far. It kind of depends on your own, if you're comfortable with it. But I have a planner, so I put all my assignments on there. I also put both my assignments on either a Google Calendar or Outlook Calendar. That way it's on your laptop and you can easily see it. In my workspace, I also print out a physical calendar just so I can always have it on my phone, my laptop, in my planner, in my workspaces, just to always have a constant reminder of these deadlines and have a full view of what each month is going to look like.
You guys make me so happy, like tears of joy. Like. As a grad student, I have the opportunity to be a teaching assistant and teach undergrads as well as graduate students, whoever kind of like enrolls in my class, and I teach an online class. So it's nice to hear you guys like say like you're planning and getting things organized. But one thing as like from this perspective that I see students sometimes miss, you two probably not, but a lot of students neglect those first emails that are coming in. A lot of those first emails from teachers are can be overwhelming, but it's really important to sit and look and read and digest and look at those dates because sometimes they don't say the same things like the syllabus. But like as a student, I think one, planning, obviously, but I, for some reason, just get really like into organizing my areas. Like I have a studio space and I have a home space and just getting all that organized, like having supplies, like having like fresh, clean sheets, like whatever, just whatever makes me feel good and like mentally clean is just so helpful to like start the semester.
Yeah. And I would say like I'm a really big planner user. I utilize my Passion Planner every semester. I think going without it, I feel disorganized. And one thing that I would always do is make sure to jot down important dates throughout the semester. So like say if you're graduating this year, you're a senior, I would definitely recommend marking down the deadlines to apply for graduation. Or because, you know, if you miss those deadlines, there's a $50 late fee. So late fees are no fun to deal with, especially as a college student when, yeah, you're definitely already on a budget probably. And I would also mark down scholarship deadlines. So to know when a scholarship is coming up, you know when to have your letters of recommendation by. So that way, when the actual deadline comes up, you're fully prepared in submitting everything and you're not scrambling at the last minute. You're not bothering someone, which I'm pretty sure, you know, if you're getting your letters of recommendation from trusted mentors and teachers, they won't mind, probably. I don't want to speak for all the teachers, though. But just asking everything ahead of hand, that's always great.
I think it's nice because the new year just started with 2020 and then going into your spring semester, a lot of students have this mindset of, okay, new year, new me, new goals. Like, what am I going to do? What am I going to change in myself for this semester? I mean, previous semester, I was all over the place. I had probably like my worst performance semesters. But this semester, I made it an obligation to really stay organized and really stop making excuses for myself. And either if it's planning out schoolwork, activities, going to exercise, and even just planning out your next steps within these last three semesters that me and Mariah have. Like considering grad school, next upcoming scholarships, internships. It's a good new year to really start making changes for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it should be said that it's okay for students not to be organized. You know, like, I feel like there's already so much expectations of you as a student that it's okay if you don't have everything set out in front of you, just as long as you know what's coming up and you're aware of what you should be getting done. I think it's okay to say that, you know, it's okay to be jumbled in life.
As we all silently nod in agreement.
Yeah, 100%. I think like all our lives are a little bit messy. Like we don't want to admit it, but, but it's so true. I remember in like undergrad being like, I'm on top of this. I have like my planner. And like I was like, not to toot my own horn, but like a good student. I was a solid student, you know. And I was like a little bit scary how regimented it was. And like a testament to that where I just needed to relax a little more. I used to budget my semesters. And for some reason, like 19, 20-year-old Brittany thought she could live off of $2.45 a meal. Yeah, because like back then you didn't have to have a meal plan or anything. And I went to another college. And so I was like, okay, so I'll make a sandwich and that the cost of it equates. Like I get down to like the nitty gritty and I would just go crazy. And then there'd be days where I'm like, I'm so hungry. And that was like so unattainable. So like I think being real with yourself and being like, yeah, I'm going to spend a little more money. I'm going to go out and get a pizza. It's just, it's so much healthier just to be like, yeah, I need to plan for that kind of lifestyle, not this perfect like idea of who I should be.
And that kind of goes into what I want to shout out is like Well, something that I recommend students do when they return to campus is like explore what's out there on campus. Every semester, I always kind of gravitated towards the same study spot or the same building or something. But I feel like definitely one that I always gravitated towards was the American Indian Student Support Services, because they have computers that I can work on over there. They always provided snacks or food, drinks for people, for students attending or just utilizing their spaces. So, yeah, always check out your AISSS on your campus. There's one on the Tempe, Polytechnic, West, and Downtown. Seek those sources out. Get to know people who work there because, you know, everyone here at ASU is someone's always looking out for each other, whether it's the students or the staff, the faculty. You know, we all want to make sure that, you know, students succeed and making sure you're not going hungry out there. So, you know, they're always providing some pretty cool stuff at AISSS.
I mean, there's other study spots as well. I mean, I haven't really utilized the AISSS study space in quite a while, but I always come here at the Center for Indian Education. If you ever need a spot to study, you're always welcome to come up here. We have a pretty quiet study space here, as well as I know they just recently moved the new space in the Hayden Library for Indigenous students. And I know there's a pretty nice study space over there as well. They have really good study spaces as well. They're kind of very hidden, like at different levels in the floor in like the computer commons or even the student services building up there on the balcony, or you just have to take the time to really kind of explore the campus and find a quiet spot. So,
yeah. When I was at the Cronkite School downtown, the sixth floors, if everyone didn't know, there's editing bays. So what those are is like spaces where the Cronkite students would, like, there's a computer in there that has a sliding door. So it's like your own personal computer lab. So if you ever need a quiet spot at the downtown campus, I recommend the sixth floor editing bays, because everyone's there minding their own business. They're not going to bug you. They're on deadline. So what would be some things that you would make sure to do on your first week of class?
I think even before the semester started, I had written down how my days were going to go and the buildings that I needed to go to. So all of my classes are in the business school. They're in the BAC, but there's three levels to the BAC. They're all lecture halls. And I am still having to look at my schedule to see what floor I need to go to. They look exactly the same, but you just need to make sure you're on the right floor. So I physically wrote it down and took a picture of it in my phone so that I can have it and know exactly, like, okay, I have a class from 7:30 to 8:45, and then right after that, I have to walk to another building to go to my 9 a.m. class, and after that, I have work. So I wrote it down so I could physically see it and kind of honestly mentally prepare myself for the long day that was ahead of me.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, as an undergrad and also a mother, I would make sure to like make some time during the first week or the first 2 weeks to like speak with my professor on the side and let them know I'm a mother, I have a child at home. So even though I know what's expected of me this semester, there's going to be days when my son gets sick, or there's going to be days when there's an emergency I just can't get around. So I think when you have that conversation with your professor, they're more understanding of days when you just have to miss class. And I think the more you're upfront with them, the more they're understanding. And I think people think of professors as like scary people who won't understand, but I think they're human beings. They know their understanding of unexpected schedules and things that pop up. At least I hope so.
That's kind of to add on to what you just said. I'm not a mom, but I am a pracademic. I do practice my craft and my skill outside of academia. So I'm an active designer. And a lot of my work requires me to travel. And so oftentimes I'll have my planner already planned out, and then I go to class and I'm like, listen up, teacher. It's not like, can I go? I'm just like, I need to go this day. Like, we're going to have to make arrangements. I know that sounds kind of bossy, but my teachers are no longer like my teachers. Like, once you're in grad school, maybe same for undergrad, but I really just teach them like, or talk to them like they're a friend or, you know, a coworker or a colleague. I know maybe that's bad like advice, but I just kind of let them know, like, this is when I will be gone. And I kind of set that tone with them. I know that I have actually a medical procedure I have to fly out of town for next month. And I think there's a due date that week, but I was just told teacher, like, I can't miss this. Like, this is my health. And here's the note, like, and they were fine with it. So that's always helpful too.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Savannah? Is there anything in particular that you make sure to get done on the first or second week of school?
Kind of just make sure I have everything in line for that week, whether it's just making sure my apartment's clean, all my laundry is done, I have food set out for that week, like planned, or just kind of mentally and physically preparing myself for a very busy week of figuring out things and maybe rescheduling work hours or switching classes or seeing if I have time to fit in activities and overall just taking the time to really make sure things are on a roll.
Mm-hmm. And also, I feel like it should be said that when students plan out their semester, they should also plan to make time for themselves. That's something that is not often done. I think we say that we will make time for ourselves, but when we get caught up in the crunch of things, you know, we're pulling all-nighters to submit projects, or we're juggling multiple jobs and school, or we're juggling home, work, and families. So I think it's always good to just set aside some time during your day to relax, binge on your Netflix show, or go out with some friends to see a movie, or just spending time with family, you know. Make some fry bread at home or something. I don't know. What do people make at home?
I think something that fits hand in hand with what we were talking about earlier is having a planner is also being good at time management. So you can be organized in what you have to do that day, what you have to do that week. But if you don't delegate enough time, I feel like it, like you were saying, like it could be all crunched together and you could maybe end up pulling all-nighters, which can be prevented. And if your time management is good, then it goes hand in hand with organizational skills. So if both of them are strong, I feel like that's the equation for a really good student.
And set realistic times for yourself. I mean, don't try and exceed and think you're gonna spend 4 hours on studying. I mean, realistically, things pop up and it's okay if your schedule doesn't go as planned, but do set realistic times dedicated to deadlines or a project or assignments.
I was gonna say something and then I just forgot. What was it? Darn it. That was really good what I was going to... Well, I don't know.
That was good. That was going to be really good. It was really good.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. So another thing is keeping an eye for burnout because, you know, I don't think you can really know that you're feeling burnt out in the moment until you reflect back on a time. Like, there's probably some semesters where I just felt completely wiped out because I kept... agreeing to do projects and kept saying yes to everything and just really overextending myself that wasn't realistically smart or, you know, just looking back on it, it was just, yeah. So I think it's also okay to say no to projects, you know, like even though you know you can get it done. Yeah, I think we should be aware on saying yes and no to certain projects and... yeah, just overall making time for yourself.
Just to add to that, I actually wrote down a note that says, like communicate with your network. And for me, that's kind of in the same realm of what you're talking about, like really setting boundaries. You don't have to be like mean about it, but you need to let your people know that like, hey, I'm in school again. I'm a student. This is important to me. And I hate to say this because like, I love my friends. They're the most supportive like people I've ever met in my life. And sometimes I just had to be like, guys, I'm going to be missing for like the next 2 weeks. I'm sorry. I'll meet up with you after. And it's funny because I really love being around them, but sometimes I'm just like, it's exhausting for me. So knowing how to say no and set boundaries for yourself, I think is so important, especially when you start something.
I think some good tips that I learned this past semester, especially being in the classroom setting, is to make friends, no matter how hard it is. It's always okay to like make a small friend group. Like there were some classes that I struggled, and I probably wouldn't have got by those classes if I didn't have a small friend group to get me by. And I know some people, it may be out of their comfort zone because I'm that person that literally just go to class, take my notes, get out of class. But I at least try to at least make one good friend. And if you make at least more than it's, that's perfect. And I think that later on, like they gradually start getting more close with them, and because you start having more classes with them, you decide to take classes with them because you get more comfortable with them and you trust them to help you. And I think that's just a tip to always try and get out of your comfort zone in a classroom.
Mm-hmm. Finding a study buddy, you know, like making sure, I don't know, just having someone in the class where you can hold each other accountable.
Or complain with each other.
Mm-hmm. Or complain or gossip. Just kidding.
I feel like I started practicing this a little later in my college career. Whenever I was a freshman, I was really scared. Like my first lecture hall class, I sat way in the back, could barely see the professor. He looked like a little bean way down there. And it was like a psych class. So everybody in the university has to take this class. And I found one girl who was actually a business major, the same as me. And we exchanged social medias, phone numbers, just so we can hold each other accountable, like you were saying. And it is really nice to be able to know that, okay, I'm not the only one struggling in this subject, or okay, we're both doing really well. And if you have that person, it makes going to class a lot easier, a lot more tolerable. And like I said, you can hold each other accountable. And
you're going to say you can hold each other.
Like, okay. Just hold each other.
After you get done taking an exam that you think right. You guys probably failed.
Cry together.
Yes. And honestly, like a lot of them, I wouldn't hang out with outside of school, which is totally fine. But if you have that like commonality of just, oh, we go to the same class and we both strive to get good grades, I mean, that alone can help you.
It's nice sometimes because say if you build that close like friendship with someone, I mean, I don't even hang out like with them outside school, like Mariah said, but they're really good acquaintances and I do trust them because say if I'm just really not feeling like going to class or if I'm sick, I have something that popped up, I'm like, hey, are you going to class? Can you happen to take notes for me? I'm like, I tell her like the whole ordeal and they can be like, yeah, for sure, I got you. I'll take notes. I'll send them to you. I'll email them to you. And it's like, that really goes a long way. And like, obviously, like you can return the favor as well.
I think since we're on the subject of social media, I also wanted to quickly chime in that you should, definitely follow some student organizations and clubs that are on social media because they share some pretty great events, like things that are happening around campus that you could benefit from. Just even staying on top of what's happening at the university. I feel like a lot of students miss out on great events and they find out about it after said event. So take advantage, follow them on social media, retweet them.
One thing that I guess maybe I'm embarrassed of it, I don't know. But I'm just like the old millennial in me, I guess, maybe. But Your phones are great. I love my phone. I live and die by the calendar, my phone. But I have everything set up to talk to each other. Like my emails all go to one central email. They come in like text messages. My calendar speaks to my email. Like my flights automatically get updated. So maybe just like a quick tip for someone who has a hard time organizing a calendar. Your phone is a great way to just connect everything, so it automatically does it. Social media and stuff is fun, but it's also really a great tool to keep you on track, whether you're trying to make change in like healthy living or just trying to stay organized and learn how to manage your time. Time management doesn't come easy to everyone. And I think there are apps to say like, oh, you've spent, you know, I think we all get that. Like if you have an iPhone, you get the screen time. It's like you've spent 10 hours today on the screen and you're like, oh God. But they do have apps to actually actively track you if you want to, you know, chime in for like how long you're working or how long you can sit to study at a time. I think your phone can be like a really great tool if you allow it to be.
So I think we can wrap up with our thoughts on what we're looking forward to this semester.
So I have a 7:30 yoga class with Savannah.
Ooh, fun.
And,
both of you.
Yeah. And we had our first class today and it was actually really fun. So I'm hoping that can be like, it was my first ever yoga class. So I really enjoyed it and I really hope that I grow in it, both strength-wise, mentally, just connecting with myself. And hopefully because of this semester will be one of my hardest, that this class can kind of like ground me and focus my mind for my long days ahead. So
I love that. I actually have a similar thing in my schedule where every Saturdays I'm taking a weaving class.
Ooh,
and cool. I know like weaving for me is, it's a 2.5 hour class and it's mostly me just sitting in front of a loom and weaving where it's just everything is just so relaxing. I'm in my own thoughts. I'm able to like get back to myself. So that's something I'm looking forward to. I'm so happy to hear that you guys have that yeah. same thing going on with your
schedule.
I guess
that can kind of be a tip for students is, I mean, honestly, if like Mariah didn't say she was down to take a yoga class, I wouldn't have done it this semester. But it was the fact that like one of my friends was willing to get out of their comfort zone and do it, then I was willing to do it. And I think it could really be helpful because especially if we have like this upcoming semester is going to be really stressful, then it'll make waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning really worth it because you're stretching, you're journaling down your thoughts in that morning, you're just waking your body up and just really getting the whole week started.
And it's for credit.
Yeah, it's for 2 credits.
What? Wow. How did this happen?
I know, right?
Is this through the Sun Devil Fitness Center?
No, it's just in Bulldog Hall. It's by the bookstore. It's classified as a dance class.
It's classified as a dance class compared to if you were to take any like fitness classes at the Sun Devil Fitness Center, it'll only be considered 1 credit. But due to the fact that it's a dance like course, considered a dance course, it's 2 credits. And it's for like the whole semester, not just a session A or a session B.
Yeah. So it's technically an elective class, which everybody gets to take those. So a fitness class could be something to really relieve your mind and body.
Ooh, maybe that's like a future tip for like next semester. If you know things are still going to be hectic, take an elective course that just calms you and decompresses you. That's cool.
I like that. You're so brave. I'd be so like embarrassed to be like, oh God, everyone's going to look at my butt in the air.
Actually, there's a twerking class that I've heard of.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we have a few people in the office who take advantage of that. And, you know, you always see it on social media, from their social media, like what they're doing that day.
Right? And they seem to really enjoy it. And they said it's like all types, from intermediate to advanced, and everybody.
Advanced twerkers.
Yeah, right?
Oh my goodness.
It's like a thing now.
Like you could get like a degree in twerking.
I major in twerking.
I'm a doctor in twerking.
PhD.
I think I'm just really looking forward to like a lighter semester. Not like my, not that my major isn't demanding because it really is, but I'm taking like the minimum amount of credits. I'm not taking an elective this semester. I got really sick in the past like 6 months and I have chronic like illness. So it's nice to like think about healing and progressing.
Well, I'll wrap up with what I'm most excited for this semester is definitely hearing more from students and hearing students' stories, sharing their stories through the podcast, through the magazine, making sure that our Native students on campus are seen, and highlighting Native student voices through all of our platforms on social media. So looking forward to serving another semester for you, the students.
And just a kind of a side note, if any students out there have any questions and want to personally reach out, I don't know if this can go for anyone, but it can go for me. You can personally reach out to me on any social media. You can come by the center and talk to me. We can do a little study group, exchange advice, exchange notes, exchange study spaces. I'm always willing to make new friends and find new ways to get to make this semester easier, not just for me, but for everyone else.
Ooh, Nishana.
Hello, everyone. I am Nicolette Deschini-Parkers with Turning Points Magazine, and this is My Take. In My Take, I and other contributors will be offering our take on recent news and or events that are happening either at Arizona State University or throughout Indian Country. Today, I will be discussing two incidents that deal with the importance and significance of hair to Native American peoples. One of these events actually happened on Halloween 2018 at Cibola High School in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where a teacher cut the hair of a Native American student and asked another student if they were dressed as a, quote, bloody Indian, unquote. The incident raised concerns of discrimination and cultural insensitivity of Native American students' culture. Susan Montoya Bryan of the Associated Press reported recently on January 8, 2020, that the American Civil Liberties Union of New Mexico, the ACLU, is suing Albuquerque Public Schools and the former teachers citing discrimination and hostile learning environment. The second incident occurred in January 2020. On January 13, 2020, a Native American woman, Tara Hauska, tweeted, "Going through TSA at MSP Airport. The agent said she needed to pat down my braids. She pulled them behind my shoulders, laughed, and said, 'Giddy up,' as she snapped my braids like reins. My hair is part of my spirit. I am a Native woman. I am angry, humiliated. Your fun hurt." The Associated Press, in a January 15th article, reported that the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, has since apologized for the offensive behavior of the TSA agent. And so these are two incidents that have just happened just in January 2020 that I'd like to discuss. As a Native American person, I am both Navajo and of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. I am aware of many more incidents where Native American people's hair has caused them to be discriminated against or made fun of, or where students have been asked to or told to cut their hair before coming to school. I want to discuss how important and the significance of hair to Native American people, especially to youth in the education system. As a prior health disparities prevention researcher, I have been involved with research where we have asked students to describe aspects of their culture that bring them strength and make them resilient. And oftentimes, one of those answers have been that students discuss the importance of their hair, that hair is something that brings them strength, it connects them to their culture. And what we know in terms of health disparities prevention research is that having a strong connection to one's culture is just one factor that reduces and helps to prevent risky behaviors. While hair has different significance and importance to people depending on their specific tribe, overall, what we can say is that hair is important. And in these particular incidences where people are being discriminated because of their hair, people are making fun of their hair, or treating Native American people's hair disrespectfully, we need to stress the importance of cultural sensitivity to all these different avenues, the education system, federal systems such as the TSA, and just overall American culture. While individual Native Americans have different relationships with their own hair, and I need to be mindful of not drawing large generalizations that hair is important to all Native American tribes in the same way, or that all Native American people hold significance to their hair, there still is the need to remember that hair is important. It has a spiritual connection for many people. It's the way that they connect themselves to their cultural identity. Personally, I find my hair significant. And I have a very, it's a signifier of my connection to my culture. And although I may choose to style my hair in various ways that outsiders or people from other cultures might say I'm not portraying a stereotypical Native American way or relationship with my hair, it still is very important to me. Historically, what we do also know about boarding school and the boarding school era is that Native American youth, when they were brought into boarding schools, one way to sever the connection between Native American students, these Native American youth, and their culture was by cutting off their hair. The Heard Museum here in Phoenix had a, and still has, an exhibit on boarding schools, and one of the most significant exhibits that I have seen on boarding schools there at the Heard was their exhibit of a chair, a haircutting chair. I remember the first time that I saw this chair, I was overcome with a lot of emotion. Growing up, I learned about boarding schools because my father went through a boarding school and had a boarding school experience. But I knew that, so seeing that chair in that exhibit at the Heard Museum, I knew the significance of that and what that meant in terms of the way that Native peoples have been attempts to assimilate them and to break their ties to their culture has been through hair. And so that's one of the reasons why hair is so important. And these two particular incidences, although, you know, these are just two incidents in this moment in time, there are many more incidences across Indian country throughout the years that deal with hair of Native American peoples. Although these incidences are raising the need for other organizations and other peoples to become aware, more still needs to be done. Whether this is through cultural sensitivity trainings or having these type of conversations, talking more about the significance of Native American hair, this is important. One of the reasons why I wanted to do this as my take here through the Turning Points podcast is because we are here at Arizona State University within an educational institution. And I feel very proud when I walk around campus and I see other Native students sporting their hair in various ways, whether in braids or if they're wearing it traditionally for an event. I think it's really great to see that. And, you know, as a protective factor, it's also a protective factor and a factor that if we're strongly connected to our culture, it could be one resilience factor if we're experiencing stress and violence in our lives and other areas. While these two incidents are unfortunate, I think that they give an opportunity for learning and for not just from the school district standpoint or from the TSA standpoint, but also learning for people in the community, people who are reading these news articles, people who are listening to this podcast, and also an opportunity for those of you that are listening to this podcast to have these conversations with people in your circle as well. So what are other things that can be done to stress the importance of the significance of hair to Native American peoples? I think one of the other ways, obviously aside from increasing the cultural sensitivity trainings for people that work with Native American students or, you know, that have to deal with a variety of cultures on a daily basis, is also setting up boundaries and letting people know, you know, that it's not okay to touch our hair. That's another area that I see often happening. It has happened to me where I might be shopping through a grocery store and somebody walks up to me and asks me, oh, are you Native American? I can tell because of your hair. First off, that's not one way to tell whether somebody is Native American or not. Second point, it's not okay that somebody, a stranger, just walks up and does not ask to touch a part of your body, a part of your hair. Oftentimes I have been in shock and generally don't know what to do or how to respond, but part of my learning has been listening to podcasts and the way that other people are dealing with these types of incidents. For instance, the incident on January 13th where Tara Hauska tweeted what happened to her at the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport with this TSA agent. In her tweet thread, she describes how she told this agent that what this person did was harmful. And so part of our learning also is having to find how to respond to these situations. How do I respond to somebody who walks up to me and touches my hair without consent? And gaining the confidence to be able to do that, knowing that other people. And one way of doing that is knowing that there are other people in Indian country that are dealing with similar situations that are telling people, hey, that is not okay. I did not give you permission to touch my hair, or please don't touch my hair. My hair is very special and significant to me. But also knowing that we don't have to tell people why our hair is significant to us, especially strangers. Well, anybody, but even if strangers ask us, oh, why, you know, that is something that is, you know, each person has a relationship with their hair, that, and it differs by person, differs by their connection, and the reason why they are connected to their hair differs by their culture. But we don't have to justify that to anybody. And I think that's important. One of the things that I think is important, and one of the reasons why I wanted to bring up this issue of Native American hair during the My Take segment of the Turning Points podcast is, so that way we learn that this is not okay and learn ways that we can each individually deal with these type of situations once we're in them. So that is one of the reasons why I wanted to discuss it today. I'm sure there are other people that have a viewpoint on the significance and importance of hair. I am just one person. So thanks for listening to My Take with me, Nicolette Deschini-Parkhurst of Turning Points. If you have a take on news happening at ASU or throughout Indian country that is important to you, and you'd like to be part of this segment, reach out to the Turning Points podcast team and tell them you're interested in being part of My Take. Thank you.
Today's episode featured the music of Christopher Luna and the Sun Devil Drum Tie Circle. If you are or know of a Native musician who would like to be featured, email turningpoints@asu.edu. Check out our past stories by visiting our Medium page at Turning Points Magazine, and keep in touch through our Twitter at ASU Turning Point or facebook.com/ASU Turning Points. And make sure to subscribe to the Turning Points Magazine podcast to stay up to date on what's going on with the Turning Points team. Hey,
Hey, you're enough. 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 Hey, you're enough.